Rishonim, many of them ask the same question. That is, we know that the Torah is not verbose, gets to the point. And sometimes it tells us things with just one extra letter, tells me a whole halacha or whatever. It's not marich, it doesn't say things in a lengthy way. And yet, how Avraham Avinu bought Ma'aras HaMachpelah is said in great detail. When the Torah could have just said, Avraham bought it from Ephraim for 400 shekel, period. Didn't have to go into the whole give and take of what he said and what they said to begin with. What was the purpose? Why did the Torah see it necessary to go into such a great length in describing how Avraham Avinu bought Ma'aras HaMachpelah? That is the question. Before we get into the ideas that the Rishonim say, it says that there are three places in Eretz Yisrael that the Goyim cannot have any claim to. They can't have any complaint that doesn't belong to us, that we took it from them. It's interesting what those three places are, because those are the places that they bedafka have. First place is Hebron, because Torah says that Avraham Avinu bought it with a full price, right? And the Bagatz didn't exist then to be able to deny a legitimate sale, right? From a Goyim. Goyim recognized legitimate sales. Supreme Courts maybe not, of Jews. In any case, so that's one place. The second place was Shechem. Right, Yaakov Avinu bought Shechem, the Neoxita, bought that area. So it says he paid full price for it. And the third place is David HaMelech bought the Mokom HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Those three places the Goyim can't have any claim to. And those are the three places that specifically they have a claim to today. Shechem, Hebron, and the Harabais, Yerushalayim. So it could be that the Torah went into great length to describe this sale in order to make it clear that this belongs to us, because of that idea that Avraham Avinu paid an exorbitant price for it. It should at least, we should have the parsha that lets us know that it's ours. Okay, but the Rishonim say different ideas. Some Rishonim say that the reason the Torah went into great detail to tell us the give and the take, and how Avraham spoke to the people of Chet, and how they spoke to him, the Ramban says this, is to show us that God fulfilled his promise to Avraham Avinu that he would be a great person, because they referred to him as Nasi Elokim Atah B'Sochenu. You are a prince of God amongst us. They spoke to him with the utmost honor and respect. They bowed down to him. So we see that even in Avraham's lifetime, the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, that he would be a great person, recognized by the nations of the world, already was fulfilled. Another idea that the Rishonim say, based on a Medrash, is that we learn from here that anyone who promotes, enhances, helps the business deal of a tzaddik is as if he kept the Ten Commandments. 10 times it mentions B'nei Chet in the transaction between Avraham and Ephraim. To tell me, it says it 8 times in this parsha, 1 time in the end of the parsha when it speaks when Avraham is buried, and another time in Vayechi when Yaakov is buried, mentions that he bought it Mibnei Chet. So altogether, 10 times. It alludes to the Ten Commandments, that somebody who enhances or promotes the business deal, the transaction of a tzaddik, is like he kept the Ten Commandments. One of the ideas being that you can learn frumkeit, you can learn honesty and devotion to the Rabbanu Shlom for the transaction, the simple money transaction of a tzaddik. Because the way he deals with his money is as much a lesson in honesty and in devotion to the Rabbanu Shlom as the way he davens. And if it's not, then he's not a tzaddik. A Tzaddik is somebody who is not only frum beinodim lemakom, but somebody who's frum also beinodim lechaver, right? In how his honesty is and his business dealings or whatever. So therefore, the Torah went to great lengths to show us how honest Avram Avinu was in his dealings with Ephron, even though Ephron was an out-and-out cheat. But Avram dealt with him with honesty, paid him the price that he wanted, and dealt with him as a mensch. That's the second reason. Another reason, the Ramban says, that it wanted to impress upon us how important Kever Avos is. We should know where our forefathers are buried, that we could be able to go there and daven. And we don't daven to the Avos, according to many opinions, but you daven to the Rabbono Shel Olam there, that in the schus of these Avos, in the schus of the neshamas that still have a connection to the place where they're buried, God should have mercy on us. You're not davening to the neshama whenever you go to a Beis HaKvaros, to a relative. You don't daven to the neshama, preferably. Even though there are opinions that you can daven to the neshama, that it should intercede or whatever. And even though there's a prohibition in the Torah of Dorish al HaMesim, that's only where you try to bring the nefesh of the mace around, like a seance. But we just dive into the neshama that happens to be connected still to the place that the body is buried. That's not prohibited. But it's better not to do that. It's better to dive in directly to the Ribbono Shel Olam in the merit of the people who are buried there. And therefore the Torah went into great detail to tell us how exactly Avram bought it, to let us know that's an important thing. Kever Avos is an important thing, and people therefore should go to Hebron and daven there, and they should know that their own specific parents, Kever Avos is an important thing to visit. It's an honor for the parents, and it's a benefit for the children to visit their parents' grave from time to time. Okay. The Ibn Ezra says another idea, which is extremely difficult. The Ibn Ezra says, the reason the Torah went to great lengths to describe for us how Avram Avinu went to great effort and expense to bury Sarah Imenu in Maris HaMachpelah is to let us know how important Eretz Yisrael is, not only to the living, but even to the dead. Being buried in Eretz Yisrael is very important. Therefore, Avram was willing to go to the expense and the bother of burying her there in Eretz Yisrael because it's worth it. Eretz Yisrael is special. The Ramban says, I don't understand what the Ibn Ezra is talking about. I agree with him that Eretz Yisrael is special for the living and for the dead, but you don't see it here. Why? Because had Sarah Imenu died in Borough Park, and Avram Avinu went to a tremendous expense and bother to ship her body to Eretz Yisrael, then I would say, wow, he went to a bother and expense to ship her body to Eretz Yisrael. It must be special to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. But where did Sarah Imenu die? In Eretz Yisrael. Where was he supposed to bury her? In Borough Park. Of course he went to a bother and expense to bury her where she died. You don't take somebody somewhere else. You bury them. If she had died in Borough Park, maybe you would have buried her there. She happened to die in Eretz Yisrael, so he buried her here. Where do you see from the fact that Avram Avinu went to a bother and expense to bury Sarah Imenu where he buried her that Eretz Yisrael is special? That's the Ramban's question on the Ibn Ezra. Now today I just saw something the Ramban himself says which answers the question. I really don't understand why the Ramban himself didn't understand this in the Ibn Ezra. I have a much lengthier answer which we'll get to, and another new answer, but this one seems to be the simplest. The Ramban himself says the following, that it says in the Torah specifically that Maaris HaMachpelah was in Eretz Yisrael, right? Asher be'Eretz Kenan. Maaris Shdei HaMachpelah, right? And the Shdei Ephron Achiti Asher be'Eretz Kenan. And that, the Ramban says, why did it have to mention specifically it was in Eretz Kenan? Because to tell us that Avram Avinu could have buried Sarah Imenu in Eretz Plishtim, in the land of Plishtim, where Avram lived many years. Vayogar be'Eretz Plishtim yomim rabim. So he could have taken her and buried her in Eretz Plishtim. But he didn't. He buried in her Eretz Canaan, Eretz Israel. Now, according to that Ramban, his questions answered. The Ibn Ezra says like this: Avram probably had a cheap, easy place to bury her where he lived for many, many years in Eretz Plishtim. Could have buried her there. Yet he chose to spend an exorbitant amount of money with a lot of effort to bury her where she died in Eretz Canaan. Must be that Eretz Canaan, Eretz Israel, is special for even the dead. Now I was thinking, I hadn't had a chance to look into this, but I know that there is an argument whether Eretz Plishtim is Eretz Israel or not. Gaza, that's Eretz Plishtim. Okay, Aza is Eretz Plishtim. So there's a question whether that's considered Eretz Israel or that is not Eretz Israel. Aza. Now if it is Eretz Israel, then the Ramban is right still. He could have buried her there. The fact that he buried her in Moriah Machpelah was not because of Eretz Israel. He could have buried in Eretz Plishtim was also Eretz Israel. But if you hold that Eretz Plishtim is not Eretz Israel, then the Ibn Ezra makes a lot of sense. You see from here that he buried her in Hebron when he could have easily taken to her where he lived, not far away in Eretz Plishtim, buried her there. He could have taken her to Aza, and Lamaisa, he didn't. Shows you that Eretz Israel is special. I didn't have a chance to check in on this, how the Ibn Ezra holds and how the Ramban holds, if Aza is in fact Eretz Israel or not, but that could be an answer.
Yeah. How did Avraham know digging up that place, that cave? How did he know that Adam Chav was buried
here?
Was there?
Either he knew it b'nevuah,
so
right? Either the b'nevuah, or it says, there's a medrash somewhere hits me that he ran after a sheep that got away, and he came to that cave and he saw Taka that that's where Adam and Chav were buried. He discovered it by chance, not really by chance. Nothing's by chance. Okay, but whatever it is, he was there. He chanced upon that place and discovered that that was the Pesach. This is the place in the world which is closest between the physical and spiritual world. That's where the neshama, all neshamas go there to go up to Shemayim. They travel first to Hebron and then up. Okay. In any case, I have a much lengthier answer, which I think I've said here in the past, but there are new faces here, so somebody's going to hear this for the first time. And even those who are hearing it for the second time, I'm sure you don't remember the details that I'm going to tell you. And like I always say, don't worry. If you've heard this more than once from me, you didn't hear it as many times as I heard it from me. That's the following. In order to explain this Ibn Ezra, how do we see from the fact that Avram went to an expense and a bother to bury Sara Imenu in here in Moriah Machpelah that Eretz Israel is special? Bechara, she died there, so he buried her there. That's the question. In order to answer this, I want to tell you a Ramban, difficult Ramban, and the Chassam Sofer's answer to the question on the Ramban. And with that Chassam Sofer, we can answer this question too. It's just a little strange that we're using a question on the Ramban with an answer to answer a question the Ramban asked on the Ibn Ezra. But okay, it's not so strange. What's the Ramban? The Ramban says that the mitzvahs basically apply in Eretz Yisrael. They don't apply to Chutz Laaretz. No mitzvah. Mitzvahs intrinsically are for Eretz Yisrael. They were made for Eretz Israel. They have an effect in Eretz Israel. They don't have that same effect in Chutz Laaretz. However, once the Torah was given, God told us to keep certain mitzvahs in Chutz Laaretz. God's telling us. Okay? It's a mitzvah from the Torah to keep it. Why, says the Medrash, that it shouldn't be new to you when you come back to Eretz Israel. You should keep in practice in Chutz Laaretz. But when you do the mitzvah, you're fulfilling God's command. He told you to do it. But it's only because of God's command. It's not because intrinsically there is an effect that the mitzvah has in Chutz Laaretz. You're doing it because God said to do it. He'll reward you. He'll make your neshama better, right? But it's not the same thing as doing a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael, where the mitzvah itself has an intrinsic effect on your neshama. It doesn't have that effect in Chutz Laaretz. It does have an effect because you're doing what God said, and God can have the effect on your neshama. For example, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. If you keep Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, the Shabbos itself has an effect on you. In addition, God will reward you for keeping Shabbos, and that reward partially will be also another effect on your neshama. So you get two effects, one from God, one from the Shabbos itself. In Chutz La'aretz, the Shabbos itself does not have that much of an effect on you. But since God told you to do it, and you're doing God's will, God will see to it that your neshama is elevated because you kept Shabbos. But it's not the Shabbos itself that has the effect on you. Therefore, before the Torah was given, before God commanded us to keep mitzvahs, why did the Avos keep the mitzvahs? There was no command. The answer is because there was an intrinsic benefit from doing these things and not doing the things that were wrong to do. Where is the intrinsic benefit of mitzvahs? Only in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, says the Ramban, before the Torah was given and the Avos kept it voluntarily, they only kept it in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't necessarily keep it in Chutz La'aretz. Says the Ramban, that explains something difficult. How could Yaakov Avinu, if the Avos kept the Torah, how could he marry two sisters? Says the Ramban, the answer is he did it in Chutz La'aretz. They only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And Yaakov married two sisters in Chutz La'aretz. And that, says the Ramban, is the reason why Rachel Imenu died before they came back to Eretz Yisrael, that he shouldn't be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. There's only one problem with this Ramban. Where did Rachel Imenu die? Well, let's ask a simpler question. Who is buried in Rachel's tomb? Okay? Not Grant, Rachel Imenu, right? Rachel Imenu is buried in Kever Rachel. Where is Kever Rachel? In Beis Lech. Except according to the people who live around there, everybody agrees that's Eretz Yisrael. Right? Beis Lechem is part of Eretz Yisrael. So what in the world does Ramban say that Rachel Imenu died before they returned to Eretz Yisrael? Yaakov shouldn't be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. When Rachel Imenu died in Beis Lechem, she was buried there, and that's Eretz Yisrael. The simplest answer to that question is that the issur of being married to two sisters is not being married to them. It's having relations with both of them. Right? If you had relations with one sister as a married woman, you can't have relations with the other sister no matter what. So Yaakov Avinu didn't live with Rachel until she died when they came back to Eretz Yisrael. He didn't live with the sister, right, from the time that they came back to Eretz Yisrael. But the Ramban says it a little bit differently. He says that she died before they returned to Eretz Yisrael. So you shouldn't be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. It's not true. She died in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Chasam Sofer, there are different designations for this land. When the world was created, this was not called Eretz Yisrael. It was called Eretz Canaan, Eretz HaChayim, Eretz HaSgula, right? Eretz HaKodesh. Because when God created the world, he created this place to be special. But originally it was Eretz Canaan, meaning it was a land that belonged to Canaan. It was a special land, but it belonged to Canaan, temporarily. Now when it belonged to Canaan, it didn't have its full holiness. The holiness is enhanced by it having a connection to the Jewish people. Until we conquered the land and divided it up, where it became Eretz Shel Yisrael, the land that belongs to the Jewish people actually, not just potentially, it didn't have the full holiness. Meaning, if you planted something here, if a Jew happened to plant something in Eretz Yisrael before the 14 years of conquering and settling Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yoshua, it didn't have Kedushas Truma, Maisra. There was no such thing as Trumas and Maisras. Most of the mitzvahs at Pluyas Baaretz didn't have an effect because it was missing a certain amount of Kedusha. It gets a higher Kedusha when it's Eretz Yisrael rather than Eretz Canaan, Eretz HaChayim, or whatever. It has Kedusha for certain things, but not for other things. Specifically, mitzvahs at Pluyas Baaretz. Not only that, there are certain mitzvahs that don't have an effect until all Jews, or most Jews, live here in their specific place. Shemitah and Yovel are not from the Torah unless all Jews live here and are in their place. Every tribe knows its place. So that is a separate Kedusha. That's Kedusha for those mitzvahs. So what do you see? That even though this place is a very special place, it gets more holiness the more connection it has to the Jewish people. Eretz Yisrael is special, but it's special because it's Eretz, not only Eretz HaKodesh, it's Eretz Yisrael. It only becomes Eretz Yisrael when it's owned and occupied by Jews. So the fact that the Jewish people own it, occupy it, gives it greater holiness. It enhances the holiness of this place and makes it higher holiness. That's called Eretz Yisrael. Says the Tzam Sofer, in the time of Yaakov Avinu, what part of this land could rightfully be called Eretz Yisrael? Only one part, Hebron. Because all the rest of it still belonged to the Canaanim. It was Eretz Canaan. So only Hebron could be called Eretz Yisrael because Avraham Avinu bought it and it became his. And Avraham Avinu also had the designation of a Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael was only Hebron. That's what the Ramban says. And the Avos could be only kept the Torah in the place where the mitzvahs, where the place that was the ultimate Kedusha, where it was both Eretz HaKodesh and Eretz Yisrael. But otherwise they didn't necessarily keep it. So God made Rachel Imenu die before they got back to Eretz Yisrael, meaning to Hebron, even though she died in what in the future would be Eretz Yisrael at that time. It was only Eretz Canaan. So she didn't die in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. So we learn from here that the designation Eretz Yisrael means when it belongs to Jews. And that there's a higher holiness when the Jewish people, what's it called, bond with the land. There's a question, before we get to the Ibn Ezra and answer it, I want to tell you another question this will answer. Many people, in order to criticize the Torah, right, and malign it, bring up the following question. The Gemara in Kedushin says that we learn marriage. How you affect a marriage is one of the ways is by giving the man, giving the woman something in front of witnesses that's of value, money or something worth money, shava pruta, and saying Hariat Makudeshesli. That is one way you affect a marriage. How do we know that? Where do we, the Torah never says, right, you want to marry a woman, give her a ring and say, the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, ki yikach ishisha. A man will take a woman. Now maybe he clubs her over the head and drags her by her hair into his cave. How do you know how he takes her? So we learn it from Exirah Shav. The Torah used the terminology, ki yikach, taking. And over here where Avraham Avinu bought the field of Hebron, it says, Kesef hasodeh kach mineni. The money for the field, take from me. So the rabbis learn from here that when the Torah was given, God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm using the same terminology by buying the field with money to taking the woman. And the same way Avram took the field with money, that's how you take the woman with money. Okay, that's how we know that marriage is affected by giving the woman something of value and saying Harayat Mekudeshes. So what do people say who want to malign the Torah? What do you see from here? The rabbi's concept of marriage was buying a woman. It's a real estate deal. You buy a field, buy a wife. Right? Same thing. We learn one from the other. They seem to be equated. So the rabbis looked at marriage as a mercenary deal, just like you buy a real estate. Right? And that reduces a woman to a piece of dirt, like a field. So how do we answer that? So what I'm going to tell you now shows it's not just that there's no question, but this is the place specifically in the Torah we can really see what marriage is. Dafka over here in this deal that Avram made. You have to first understand why Avram Taka had to go to all this bother. What was the problem? The people wanted to give him a grave right away. He said nobody will hold back their grave. Take it. What did he make such a big deal? So this, some of the Mefarshim, the Sfarno, the Ramban, Reb Shamshon Foil Hirsch, all say a little bit of what I'm going to tell you, and I'm putting it all together as a challenge of all of them together. It's much better than just a few beans here and a few little barley here. Putting them all together, we come out with the following picture. In those days, there were two kinds of cemeteries in every city. There was the private family plots that people used to bury their families, generation after generation. That was called a family plot. That was called Achuzas Keber, where you had an Achuzah, a claim on the burial plot. And they were, what's it called, zoned places, right, where people had their dairy farm. They weren't in your backyard, right? You couldn't have cemeteries in the middle of, there was zoning. But they had cemeteries that every family had their own family plot. Then there was another kind of cemetery. Because not everybody who died in a city lived in that city and was part of the families who lived in the city. Sometimes a person came to the city visiting and he dropped dead. Or he came on a what's it called, a tiul. Or he was passing through. People die like that. Even in recent history that happens. And not always are bodies shipped back. Today it's easier with planes or whatever. But even today, sometimes a person's buried where he dies. The Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Blazer Gordon, was in London collecting funds for Telzer Yeshiva. He lived in Lithuania. This was the beginning of the 1900s. And he died in London, right? Because his collection wasn't at all successful. He died of a broken heart over there. And they didn't ship his body back to Lithuania. They buried him in London. I was in his cabin, so in the outskirts of London, where Blazer Gordon is buried. So, surely in those days, you couldn't just ship a body back to where the person lived. Somebody was passing through. And they couldn't bury him in a family plot. He had no family there. So what they had is city-owned cemeteries where people who did not live in that city could be buried. But they didn't own the land. The city owned the land. Right? They didn't own the land. It wasn't like a family plot. They had rights to be buried there. Rights of usage of the land, but the land itself belonged to the city. When Avraham Avinu came to the people of Chet looking for a burial plot, he said, I have a dilemma over here. Because ger v'toshav anochi imachem. On the one hand, you consider me a stranger. You don't consider me one of you. I'm only a stranger here. Right? You don't consider that I have rights over here to have a family plot. Nobody ever died here from my families. First one. You consider me a ger, but I'm telling you I'm a toshav because eventually this land's going to be mine and I'm going to be the real citizen here. So I don't want to bury my wife in a city-owned grave. I want to bury my wife in my grave that my family plot will be because I want you to recognize the fact that I belong here. So tnu li achuzas kever. Give me a family plot. Now, since everything was zoned, right, there was no, you can't just take land and make it into a family plot. It had to be zoned for a family plot. That means somebody already owned it. So Avraham Avinu said, I know that I can't ask somebody to sell me their family plot. That's very mercenary. It's like selling your mother. You don't sell family plots. Sacrilegious. So give it to me. And don't worry, I'll make it up to you. Okay? If you give it, you're magnanimous. You sell it, you're mercenary. So give me your family plot, and I'll bury my wife, and don't worry, Avraham hinted to them, you won't lose out if you give it to me. So what did the people say? Nothing doing. They answered and said, you're a great person, the Nesi Elokim, but you don't belong here. No one will hold back their grave from you, but they're not going to be your grave, it's going to be their grave. Their grave that they give permission to you to use, but it's not going to be yours, it's not going to be owned by you. Avraham says, I know somebody here who will sell me his family plot. Ephraim. He'd sell me his mother too if he'd make a profit on it. Ephraim would do anything for money. So Avraham says, I want you to be the mitaveich, right? You be the middleman. Get me together with Ephraim, and I know that I can work an arrangement that I'll get the family plot from him. So Avraham knew that Ephraim would be willing to sell the family plot. But on the other hand, Ephraim would have compunctions of it looking like he sold a family plot. So Avraham's going to have to find a way for Ephraim to save face and to get money for the family plot, but make it look like he didn't sell it. So that's why there's all this Shmo'eini Adoni, listen to me, hear me, but they're all deaf. Sounds like, you know, two deaf people talking, right? No, they're hinting. I can't say it right out. But if you listen carefully, you'll get the hint, and we're going to make this sale in a way that you'll save face and I'll get what I want. First thing Avraham says, Shmo'eini Adoni, listen carefully. Ephraim, give me the family plot with a full price, give it to me. That's a contradiction. If you're giving it to him, then you're not paying for it. If it's a full price, that's called buying. That's not called giving. So Avram is saying the following. Ephron, I don't want to make you look like a mercenary person who would sell his mother, sell his family plot. So give it to me magnanimously. I'm in a bind. My wife needs to be buried. I want my own family plot. You're going to give it to me. You're going to really come out of this shining like a real magnanimous person. And if you give me this present, I'll give you another present called money. Not a deal. It's not a sale. Right? You're giving me a present. I'm going to give you a present. So Ephron gets his money. Avram gets his Maris HaMachpelah. And it's not a mercenary business deal. Ephron doesn't like that suggestion because something is not 100% to his liking with it. What is that? If Avram Maris HaMachpelah is a present, and Avram promises to give him a present, who decides how much of a present Avram's going to give him? Avram. He can't say, well, I think you should give me this present, right? Then it's not a present anymore. So Ephron can't make the price, and Ephron wants to make the price. He doesn't want to depend on Avram Avinu's decision of how much it's worth. So Ephron says, you listen to me and you get the hint. I have a different idea how we can make this work. It won't look like I sold you the grave, yet I'll make the price. How? Like this. Please take the grave and the field in front of it. Avram thinks to himself, whoever is speaking about fields, I just want the grave. I'm not interested in the field. Then it hits him. The only access to that grave was through a field that Ephron owned that was in front of the grave. There was no other way to get there. It was at the end of the field. So what Ephron was telling Avram is the following. I'm willing to give you the grave for free, but you should realize that if you get that grave, you have to get through my field and I won't give you access. Unless you have a helicopter, there's no way for you to get to your field. So you're going to have to buy the field from me to get access to the grave. Fields, I can sell. I can even make the price up. That's not sacrilegious. I'm not selling you a grave. I'm selling you a field. Except it happens to be that without that field, you have no access to your grave. Avram gets the message and he says, fine. Kesef hasodeh kach mimeni. I'm willing now to give you whatever you want for the field. You're giving me the grave for free. You're selling me access to the grave by selling me the field. Great. How much do you want for the field? Ephron says, 400 shekel between friends. How much is that? That's millions of dollars. That's how it comes out. Millions of dollars. A few million dollars for a field was between friends. So he overcharged him tremendously, but Avram had no choice. So Avram spent all that money for the field. He got the grave for free. And he spent the money for the field because otherwise Ephron would have not given him access to the grave. That's what happened in the end. Now, why did Avram buy this field? Because he wanted a piece of real estate? No. He didn't want real estate at all. Why did he want to own Maris HaMachpelah in order that his wife should be buried in Eretz Yisrael, not in Eretz Canaan? Because if he owned it, then the land was elevated to the status of Eretz Yisrael, and it had a tremendous effect on his wife. He had an effect on the land, and the land had an effect on his wife. But if he didn't own the land, then it remained Eretz Canaan, wasn't with full kedusha. So the reason Avram bought this field was not because he wanted a mercenary real estate deal. It's because he wanted to bond with the land and raise it to the level of Eretz Yisrael, so Sari Menu would be buried in Eretz Yisrael, not Eretz Canaan. That's exactly what Ibn Ezra says. The reason the Torah tells us of the expense and the bother that Avram Avinu went to buy Maris HaMachpelah was to tell us how special Eretz Yisrael is, not Eretz Canaan. That by buying it, he made it Eretz Yisrael. Had he wanted to, he could have taken it for free. It wouldn't have been his. It would have remained in their ownership, and he could have buried Sarah without any expense, without any bother. But she wouldn't have been buried in Eretz Yisrael. She would have been buried in Eretz Canaan. So we see from here how important it is that Eretz Yisrael is for the living and the dead. Not Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. And that only was affected by Avram going to the length that he did to make sure that it was his. Not to acquiesce to get usage of their land, but to make the land his own. And that's why it says, by Yochum stay Ephraim. The land itself had an elevation. It was elevated. So, and that is marriage. So it comes out, Avram didn't buy this to buy real estate. He bought it to bond with the land, to elevate the land because of his bonding, his neshama with the land. Now it belonged to him. It was elevated. And now when he buried his wife there, it elevated her neshama. It's a symbiotic relationship. He elevates the land elevates him. That's marriage. You give something of value, bond two neshamas, each one elevates the other one. That's what marriage is all about. That's why exactly what we learned from this parasha. Because this parasha of buying the land was not a mercenary acquisition of real estate. It was a bonding of Avram's neshama to the land, elevating the land, and the Mela burying his wife there and elevating her neshama because it was buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's the idea. Thinking even more simply than that, what the Ibn Ezra is saying is the following. Had the Torah just said that Avraham Avinu bought this field and he buried his wife there, then the main thing was that he buried his wife. The goal, the object, the result was what was important. The means of how he got to it was not important at all, because the Torah didn't spend a long time with him. The Torah spends time on what's important. Okay? So, therefore, if the Torah only highlighted and pointed out the result, then the result of burying his wife is what's important over here. Where she was buried, how she was buried is not that important. But if the Torah goes into detail and tells us every step along the way what Avram did, then it's not just the goal that's important, that his wife was buried, but how she was buried, where she was buried is important. Otherwise the Torah wouldn't spend time on it. And therefore, from the fact that the Torah spent the time, that tells me that it's not only the burial that was important, it was where the burial was and how it was done was important. The Torah spent time on all the details. That's how I know that Eretz Yisrael is special. Because the Torah told me it's not only the final result that's important, it's the, all the means that went into it, which means Avraham Avinu buying the place and making it Eretz Yisrael with him. That's another possible explanation of Ibn Ezra.